Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Always great to have you with us as we are live across the country from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. in the East. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up, we recap last night's game two of the NLCS, Dodgers and Brewers in Milwaukee. In 20 minutes, a coach and a conference get into a fight on Twitter. Welcome to 2025. Plus, since it's a Wednesday, we'll have my streaming corner at 6:40. I'm Jinx. She's Chelsea. We are midway through the week. Chelsea, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I thought you guys could maybe see my shirt from Pebble Beach, but you can never tell. I feel like I always want to wear these like fun graphic t-shirts or like something with like something on the shirt, but you can never read it anyway. Nothing's ever fun.
Looks great. I like it.
It's
I like
written
the trim.
In white.
I like the trim is what I like. The darker blue trim on the outside. Yes.
Yes,
it's a nice frame. I like the zip top. Looks very comfortable, but also casual. It's not too uppity, but also appropriate for the show. Good choice this morning.
I feel like golf attire is actually like, I would always lean into this when I worked in TV, because think about it. Like, I don't know if you had to do your own camera work much, but like I did. So I was out there sweating in Florida. So I feel like golf stuff looks like, it looks a little buttoned up, but it's also comfortable and you can be active in it. But let me ask you, are you somebody who has to get like a souvenir t-shirt every time you like go on a vacation or you go to a concert?
Not me, but the lovely Catherine is. She's the queen of swag. Anytime we go somewhere. The good thing for me is I usually get something. Like, she goes somewhere and she's like, look what I got. I'm like, oh, let's see it. So concert, vacation, if there's any sort of swag available or something that, you know, is some sort of memento, whether it's a t-shirt, whatever, she's got to have it. Every now and then, if I see something that I really like, I'll go for it. But I don't have that impulse to grab something all the time. But some people do. I live with one of those people.
Yeah, I'm the same way, where it's like a very rare occurrence that I actually get something. But I don't know. We had a good time. I think we were out there for a wedding.
Okay.
But Pebble Beach was really cool.
Oh,
like,
God,
I envy golfers so much just because it's so scenic. And it's so nice. And, like, the clubhouse serves the best food. I think it was one of the best steaks I've had in my life. So I have said this once before that the best professional sport to be in is definitely golf, because your venues are just so amazing.
Yeah, there are times in the middle of a round I just stare off into the distance like, wow,
right?
This is my life. It's amazing. You're like, Jenkins, hurry up. You're going to get penalized. I'll be like, I don't care. I'm going to make a snowman on this hole anyway. Give me a 9. Doesn't matter. Well, Chelsea, you were not on the card yesterday. How's Dabby do? Is Dabby okay? We have to check in on everybody.
She's had one more seizure, but I think she's like winding down. Normally she goes like seizure, and then if she's having them like every hour, that's like the danger zone. Mm-hmm. But I do think the medicine's working. So Dabby, I think, is on the mend. Let's hope so. Jenks, I was sweating out your bet with you. I was watching this one, and I was a little nervous. I think the Dodgers had like a runner on first with one out. And then they got that double play ball. I was like, yes, there we go.
Let's go.
That was a fun one to sweat out, though. It was a good bet.
It was. I mean, it's fun now. At the time, I was like, I don't know. It was so much fun. I needed one because I was not good to start the week, but did get a win in that game. Dodgers Brewers first 5-4. Dodgers on top 2-1. Dogster on a run. Had the Dodgers on the money line against the Brewers. Dodgers win 5-1. We're about to talk about that game. So for the week, you are 0-1-1. I'm 1-2-1. And the Dogster is 2-0. But this is sort of how it works, right? We get our bearings and then we go on a run once football hits, and it's going to hit tomorrow night. First, we talk baseball and game two, Dodgers and the Brewers. The Dodgers win 5-1. The Dodgers minus 120 on the money line, total set at 7.5. The under hits, and things start out perfectly for Milwaukee.
The postseason, and on the first pitch, Jackson Churio sends one into deep right, and that one's going to fly out of here. Churio with a home run to start it offensively for the Brewers.
That call from TBS, 1-0 Milwaukee, but then the Dodgers respond in the second, home run from Teoscar Hernandez, and then Max Muncy does the same in the sixth.
Another 3-2, Muncy into center field. Frelick turns and runs. That ball's deep. Frelick jumps, and it is up and out of here. Max Muncy.
His 14th home run in Dodgers playoff history. That's a franchise record. But this game is all about Yoshi Yamamoto. Throws a complete game. Three-hitter. First complete game in the playoffs since Justin Verlander did it in the 2017 ALCS. Yamamoto retires the final 14 batters of the game. Doesn't give up a hit after the fourth inning. This guy was untouchable. What a performance.
Absolutely. Absolute masterclass in the biggest of moments, because now the Dodgers have a commanding 2-0 lead in this series. And now they go back home. So this was big from both of their starters to have Blake Snell go 8 the night before and then Yamamoto go 9 complete game. That is a huge deal for a Dodgers bullpen that is their absolute weakness. So to relate this to bettors, we always say this on the show where people are like, oh, I should improve on my weaknesses, right? No, just lean into your strengths. And that's exactly what Dave Roberts did. He didn't even go to the pen.
Yeah, it's amazing. And last year, the Dodgers would barely have a starter go 6 innings. And now, he's got dudes just absolutely throwing smoke. I mean, the Brewers, imagine if you're Milwaukee and you get off to this start where Churio goes yard. First pitch from Yamamoto. And you're like, oh my God, we got this. And then after that, the ability to settle down and lock in, especially after a start like that, I thought was so impressive. And also, if you go back to the regular season, even though Yamamoto's been really good in the postseason, he got rocked by the Brewers last time out. So they had hit him hard before. Then he gives up a home run, and you would think, hey, he might get in his head. Instead, it was just the opposite. It was just a brilliant performance.
Right, a mental masterclass as well, because think about a team that chased you from the first inning. He's got to have that in the back of his mind, especially when you give up a leadoff home run. You're saying to yourself, oh no, here we go again. So to focus in after that and just completely shut down the Brewers after that is a huge deal. It's funny how I just saw this clip of Joe Maddon, who was the manager of the Cubs when the Cubs won the World Series, about how he thinks managers should be leaning less into analytics and more into like the eye test and just knowing the pitcher personally, because they were talking about Blake Snell's performance the night before. And he was saying a lot of these teams rely very heavily on analytics, saying, oh, this guy only needs to go 5. And then we'll put in this guy, and this guy to face whoever. But he was saying that like, it's nice to see a return to just the field test where you know a pitcher. And if you know he's dealing, do not take him out. And it's nice to see the Dodgers kind of lean into that, because, Jenks, hasn't it felt like this is the only team that's really doing that?
Yeah, of all the teams, too, the Dodgers. So I would not have expected that. But I love that point by Joe Maddon. And listen, analytics absolutely have a place, and it has improved different sports in different ways. But I also think at the same time, you know, you can't quantify everything. And so how is someone's mental state? If you're a pitcher, are they locked in more than they normally are? Are the other batters frustrated? What are their ways of carrying themselves? Like, do they look like they're confident or do they look defeated? You know, how does the guy's body feel when he's on the mound? Because some of these guys feel better than they have most of the season. Some guys feel worse. There are some intangible qualities there that you can't necessarily measure. And I think I said this during the Tigers game in a previous series, where Casey Mize was playing better than he had all season, and then A.J. Hinch took him out, and immediately the Tigers got roughed up. And so he went to analytics, and I'm like, dude, this guy was pitching out of his mind relative to the regular season. What are you doing here? So there is something to be said for feel.
Right, and you got to allow guys the opportunity to be great. It almost feels like the very popular quote that relates to baseball. It's like, don't let the fear of striking out let you like keep you from playing the game. It's like these managers are scared. It's like, hey, he's dealing now, but like, what happens next inning? I don't know. Like, legends are made in October. Let the guy eat if he's doing well.
Yeah. Also, a lot of history made last night. The last Dodgers pitcher to throw a complete game in the playoffs, Jose Lima, back in 2004 in the NLDS against the Cardinals. Yamamoto also just the fourth player in Major League Baseball history to give up a leadoff home run and then throw a complete game in the postseason, joining, how about these names, Johnny Antonelli in 1954, Johnny Beasley in 1942, oh, and Babe Adams, 1909, all of whom did it in the World Series. And I looked up Babe Adams, by the way. Still shares the Pirates franchise record for wins by a righty to this day. Old Babe Adams.
Woo. To this day. Babe yeah. Adams. Yeah. Yes, the more famous of the Babes.
That's who I refer to, the Babe.
Because if it was 1909, he was before Babe Ruth, right?
Yeah, the original Babe. That's what I call him. Babe Adams, of course. But it just goes to show, when this hasn't happened since 1954, clearly you are doing something historic.
Oh, absolutely. And especially with the way that this Dodgers team is made up, to where their bullpen is their weakness. So they have barely even had to touch their bullpen in the first two games of the series. Now they're going back home. It just goes to show how much starting pitching absolutely matters. And that's why these guys make so much money, because, you know, you can really lean on these guys. And I think, you know, looking to other teams, this is why losing Gerrit Cole hurt so bad for the Yankees, because if you get to a seven-game series, that's somebody you can lean on not once, but probably twice in a series. So it will be interesting to me to see if some of these guys retain, you know, this level of power and dominance in their next start. Because, Jenks, if you're the Dodgers, you are not thinking about this series alone. You're thinking about the World Series probably a little bit as well. So we'll see if Yamamoto, his next start, will look just as sharp and can go as many pitches. Probably not, but sometimes guys are not quite as sharp after going like a complete game or throwing a bunch of pitches. So maybe that's something we'll have to wait and see on.
So you mentioned Dodgers and World Series. This over already? Brewers have any shot whatsoever? At all. It doesn't feel that way. Like when you have home field advantage and you give away two to the Dodgers. And even Pat Murphy, the Brewers skipper, said after the game, I understand 90% of the teams that have been in this situation don't win the series, but this team has been counted out a lot. I think they have some fight left. Do they have enough fight to make this a series? It doesn't feel that way.
It feels like it's definitely an uphill climb to win the series, but it won't shock me if like they win a game or two, right?
Right.
But the tough part is Freddie Peralta was their guy last night, and they don't have starting pitching depth, especially since Brandon Woodruff is out. So they are banking on, what did they say, 1.5 starters? Because I don't know what they're counting Jacob Mizorowski as. So maybe they can claw their way back into this. But it just feels like it's not going to be the case with the Dodgers, especially this lineup, who hasn't even had to produce huge numbers just because the pitching has been so good. And here's the other thing, Jenks. Shohei Ohtani has not been performing very well. They were talking about this on the broadcast last night, and he did get a hit. I will tip my cap to that. But before that, he was on a 1-for-23 run in the postseason. It has not been great postseason numbers for Ohtani. So it's wild that the Dodgers have a commanding 2-0 series lead, and they've gotten basically nothing from Ohtani.
Well, it's just crazy. The Dodgers, I mean, we know their lineup, and I'm just speaking for me here, but with the focus on a guy like Ohtani, and of course, he's the best player on the planet, I understand that. So whenever he does something, there's so much of a spotlight on that. And then when he goes cold, then you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about Teoscar Hernandez or Max Muncy or Kike Hernandez. Oh, what about Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman? He had a home. Like, all these other guys who are mega stars in their own right come to the surface, if you will, and you're like, oh, I forget Shohei can go absolutely ice cold, and it doesn't matter, particularly when Yamamoto is pitching a complete game. Like, this is the Dodgers almost maxing out, and if Shohei takes it to another level, which he has that ability to do it any time, then they're just going to be a wagon.
Right. Like, he's too good of a hitter to not, like, break out of this.
Right.
Like, everybody goes through slumps at some point. Like, remember, this was the talking point for Aaron Judge in the postseason before this year. So I don't know if he gets back on the right side of things. It would be helpful for the Dodgers if their leadoff man could actually get on base. But you're right. They get so much production from the bottom of the lineup. Even Kike Hernandez, his numbers are wild. Like, the fact that his career batting average in the postseason is way higher than his regular season average. He's hitting .290 in the postseason in like a bunch of games. I think he's playing like 89 games or something. And he did it again last night. So it's some of these guys in the Dodgers lineup that just turn it on when the calendar flips to October.
Yeah, they do. And man, I just feel like it's only a matter of time for Shohei. If you're curious about the series price right now at BetMGM, the Dodgers are minus 1,200. The Brewers are plus 750. If you want to bet on the NLCS total games, total set at 5.5. Over is 2-1. Under is minus 250. Game 3 tomorrow night in Los Angeles. Tyler Glasnow on the mound for the Dodgers, a minus 185 favorite. Coming up next in the show, Mel Kiper has released his big board for next year's NFL draft. But are we paying attention, really? That is next on the Daily Tip here on the BetMGM Network.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wednesday. Great to have you with us here on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Hope you're having a great morning. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up on the show, the Big 12 has something to say about one of its former members, and it's not very nice at all. God, I was so tired yesterday. I told the lovely Catherine, I said, we got to just get away just for like, I don't care how long it is, like 3 days, whatever. Let's go somewhere. Anywhere. And so then last night, she was like, hey, I have an idea. I said, okay. She said, let's just, once you have like a three-day weekend, when you get a bye week, whatever, let's do something we don't normally do, and let's just go like to a cabin somewhere and just like sit, turn off our phones, and watch the leaves change, and put on a fire, and have some cocoa or whatever, and just relax. And I was like, that actually sounds amazing. Which isn't like us. Normally it's water, 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 beach, beach, beach. But it is the fall. You know, it's football weather right now. And I think that sounds great. When is the last time you went? I'm not a camper, by the way. Let me not exaggerate too much. I'm not going to be chopping wood and building some sort of fortress out in the woods or anything like that. But I do appreciate fall. Are you a big camper? When's the last time you went out and just sort of enjoyed the fall weather?
Well, I don't camp. I feel like it's stupid and it's going backwards. Like, why would I camp when I can stay in a 5-star luxury hotel and enjoy the outdoors during the day? But I will say this is how our trip to Canada felt when we went to Banff.
Oh, yeah.
Because even though it was like the middle of the summer, it was still kind of cold at night. So like our room had a fireplace. It was really cozy. You know, they had all the really tall pine trees. So it's definitely cool, I think, to switch it up occasionally. Because usually in the summer, like, everybody goes to, like, the beach or something. But I personally was super tired of sweating. And I was like, listen, let's do something different. So I do think it can be cool to have a little change of pace when it comes to your vacations. So yeah. What are the nearest, like, destinations for, like, fall weather? Is it, like, Virginia? Do you go further north? Where do people go around there?
You can do Virginia for sure. We may look at West Virginia, which is a quick drive, actually. Not that bad. And of course, there's tons of scenery there. So I think that's probably where we'll head because we've been to West Virginia. We haven't camped in West Virginia. What about glamping? Would you do that? Because that's probably more of our speed. Like, I'm not going to be like, hey, there's no dinner tonight, but don't worry. I'm going to go rustle up some raccoon and squirrel and we'll cook it over the stove. Like, I will camp to a point and then I'm like, all right, I don't want to rough it out here. I'm not an outdoorsman necessarily, so it's not really my speed. What about glamping? I feel like you can glamp.
No, feels like skim milk where it's a fraud. Like, just be normal milk or don't be milk at all. So, like, glamping, what are we doing here? Like, you might as well just stay in a hotel. And you can hike during the day. Like, I don't know why you have to sleep outside. Like, what's the difference between camping and glamping? Maybe you have, like, outlets or something?
Yeah, you probably have electricity.
Like, if you're that close to a hotel, just stay in a hotel.
Well, you also probably have, like, a nice bed as opposed to, like, hitting the old mattress and, like, dirt comes up and dust. And you're like, you know, a cabin's been abandoned for, like, a decade. You're like, we could stay here. Very nice amenities, but you're also outdoors. Like, I feel like for me, I'd be all over that.
I would not. I'd rather stay in a 5-star hotel. Jenks, I have made a stand later in life that if I'm going to go on vacation, I need it to be a lot nicer than my current living situation.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, I understand some people are like, oh, you know, we don't really want to spend a bunch of money on the hotel. You're not staying in the hotel that much. Yeah, but I'm sleeping there. And this is how you start the day. So I feel like when I go on vacation, mm-hmm. we stay at fancy hotels. I don't care. You only live once, and I have a ton of credit card points. So
fair enough. Well, we didn't get anything fancy yesterday on Twitter. We got an old-fashioned clapback from the Big 12 taking a shot at Oklahoma head coach Brent Venables. So Brent Venables was talking about playing an SEC schedule this year. Of course, the Sooners coming off that loss to Texas. And he says this, isn't the old Big 12 days where Oklahoma destroys everybody every single week except one game a year. So the Big 12 sees this and claps back. Coach Venables lost 8 conference games in his 2 seasons in the Big 12. Can I just say, the Big 12 is the petty, jealous ex-girlfriend of college football. So petty. So petty. There was no need to do this. None whatsoever. And the Big 12 just couldn't help itself. I don't think the Sooners look that good. Did you watch them last week against Texas? They didn't look that good. They're supposed to be a top 10 team. They didn't look good. The Sooners have left themselves go. They're not nearly as good in the SEC. Like, Brent Venables was not talking about the Big 12. Like, he was more focused on the fact that the SEC is a harder conference, and it is a harder conference. It's a more difficult conference. The Big 12 is so petty. It's the most low-rent conference. I am so glad Texas is out of that conference. It's so low-rent. Remember, what was it, a couple years ago, when Texas was in its final year in the Big 12, and Brett Yormark, that yodel, got in front of Texas Tech and told them during the season, I can't wait to go to Austin and watch you beat Texas. Imagine a conference commissioner rooting against you when you play in that conference. In that conference. And now it's pretty clear the Big 12, once again, petty, bitter, petulant. Imagine a scenario where, let's say, Oklahoma ends up playing in some sort of bowl game against a Big 12 team, and there's Big 12 referees. That could happen. And you don't think the first penalty against Oklahoma that's a little sus, you're not thinking, might have it out for the Sooners. Look, I hope Oklahoma loses. I hate that I'm defending Oklahoma. This is really not necessarily defending the Sooners so much as it is defending the fact that conferences just need to, particularly the Big 12, just needs to just stop. Stop being petty. I think it's a bad look. It's great online. You're like, oh, and it just comes off the wrong way to me.
I'm sensing some leftover bitterness.
Because
I remember you bringing up this very point about the conference commissioner. And you're right. That's totally out of line. And nobody should ever be rooting against a team in your own conference just because they're leaving said conference. But, like, what are they supposed to just sit around and let everybody talk trash about them?
But was he? But was he? Wasn't he just saying, hey, this is a tougher? I mean, but it was almost like the Big 12 was looking for a reason, right? Like, is anyone going to deny that the SEC is a tougher slate than the Big 12? And that's what he was saying. This is not the Big 12.
But don't you have to be good if you're going to make that? Like, that, the reason why I am, first of all, I'm for pettiness in all of its forms in college football. But the reason I agree with this is because he didn't do anything in the Big 12. That'd be like me taking success, right, taking credit for your Emmys because right, we work together now. Like, I didn't have any, like, you won those Emmys. Oklahoma won in the Big 12 without him. Is he accurate in the fact that there were years where they just smashed the Big 12? Yes.
Yeah, yes.
But he had, he can't take shots at that when he did not do well. In fact, they had some of their worst years recently when he was the coach in that mm-hmm. conference. So he can't be taking these shots.
But isn't it about, well, I see what you're saying. But I guess what I would say is, wasn't that the point he was making? I mean, I think people wanted this to be about Brent Venables, and he was talking about Oklahoma, and immediately was like, yeah, but you haven't done it, which I guess is the same thing. I don't know. I just, to me, I understand the idea that Brent Venables is not responsible for all the Oklahoma wins in the conference. That's fine. But I think more than anything else, it's the conference stepping up. Like, we didn't need the Big 12 to chime in without knowing that. Like, we know, we've watched, Brent Venables is not the coaches that have come before him. I mean, he might be in the hot seat because Oklahoma, at the end of this run, not right now, but at the end of their schedule this year, we'll find out where he stands. I'm just saying that the Big 12 waiting to chime in is so Big 12.
I just think it's fine to correct him, though, because it does feel like stolen valor when he's like, oh, yeah, Oklahoma just runs the table in the Big 12. And you're like, well, you didn't. If it was so easy, why didn't you run the table? So I am for, you know, that type of stirring the pot and that type of pettiness, because I don't know who runs their social media. I would imagine it's not like the commissioner or anything, right?
No.
So like, this is probably some intern that's told, hey, drum up some attention. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I mean, it works. I just think that at some point, and this is probably the older person in me, but at some point, conferences, different, you know, different companies, different whoever they may be, different institutions, like at some point, maybe you hold yourself to a bit higher standard. Maybe it's college football, so it doesn't matter. But I also think at some point you can go in too much. And do I really want to see on a regular basis like conferences and coaches going after each other? I really don't. Like, this just goes back to the whole not everyone needs a voice. Like, at some point, do you hold yourself and say, you know what? We represent the conference. Let's not take a shot here at Brent Venables. And I don't care about Oklahoma. And I don't care about Brent Venables. It's just the Big 12 being as petty as possible. It's like, I don't want every single conference going in or Greg Sankey and saying, this is unacceptable. Let's take a shot at UCF today. Like, I'm all about fun and pettiness to a point, and then it becomes sort of this just garbage wheel of just everybody jumping in because everyone has a voice. And then I feel like no one's holding themselves to any sort of standard. And if you're a conference, if you're the NCAA, if you're some sort of institution, shouldn't you sort of rise above a little bit? Or am I just being old here?
Well, let me ask you this. Doesn't it feel like this is the precedent that all the big conferences have set during the offseason, where they're always beefing at each other? Because, you know, all of these meetings and stuff, it's because of the college football playoff. And so they're all campaigning for the format that best suits their needs. And so we see this mudslinging. So it's not just, you know, the Big 12 that's doing it. It's all of these big conferences.
That's true. I just feel like there's a difference between pointing out what conferences like and dislike and how they perform and jockeying for position and what
for
you want to happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the motivation is, okay, we're making our case for how we want this playoff format to go down in the future, because that affects everything, right? There's tons of money at stake. There's tons of eyeballs at stake. You're talking about the future of college football, the future of the sport. So it's important to say, here is our case. I feel like that's different than saying, here's an opportunity for us to take a shot at a guy who is heading up the Oklahoma program, which used to be a part of our conference. I just feel like there's levels to it. And at some point, you should say, all right, this isn't our place. Let the coaches do this. Let the players do this. People are going to do this. But let's not have the conferences jump in the mud as well. That's what I'm saying.
Do you think we're overreacting too much to one tweet? I do this a lot. And I think
yes.
It's us being older, maybe. Because I feel like the younger generation, they're like, whatever, it's just one tweet. I just kind of tweeted it. Like,
yeah,
I don't know how old this person is who's running this account, but at the end of the day, like, it really isn't that big of a deal, but it is fun to talk about.
Yes, it is. Also fun to talk about, Mel Kiper, old Kipe. He's back with a big board on ESPN on the same week that BetMGM is starting to offer odds for the number one overall pick. So he has not just his big board and his expectations for the draft, he has top 10 by position as well. So Dante Moore, quarterback at Oregon. Jeremiah Love, running back Notre Dame at 2. Fernando Mendoza, Indiana quarterback at 3. Arvell Reese, Ohio State linebacker at 4. Peter Woods, defensive tackle at Clemson. I promise I will not read all 100 names. But you're like, oh my God, stop. Please, stop. Number 68. But when you see this, the big board from Mel Kiper, do you pay attention? Do you care? I feel like you are not a big draft person. And also, I feel like Mel Kiper over time, I hate to say this, but I feel like his star has started to fade just a little bit. A lot of Todd McShay people out there. And then Kiper lost his mind last year during the Shedeur Sanders thing. Remember that? Like in the fifth round,
yes.
Like you could see Mel Kiper like, it's like, yo, hey. So, I think it's interesting. I like looking at draft boards, but does this influence you? Because it's October. The draft is in what? April? We got a long time between now and then.
That's what I keep thinking to myself, is that this is like thinking about your fantasy football team like 6 months ahead. There are so many things that could happen between now and then, including injuries. Like some of these guys might not even make it to the draft without suffering, you know, some kind of big injury, which I certainly hope is not the case. Or think about these guys who progress more throughout the season, because like the season hasn't ended. There's still plenty of time for these guys to improve, to look better. So I don't know what he's basing this on, like if it's just based on purely potential. But to me, you look at all these names and it's like all the big names from the big schools. So like, what if these teams start losing? And especially, you know, guys where we don't have a huge sample size, like Fernando Mendoza has been a great story at Indiana. I don't think he's going to tail off. But like, how much is this tied to their success of their team? And I think he kind of hit the nail on the head when it's, when Mel Kiper used to put out things, I feel like people used to stop and listen. But I feel like he's been wrong on some big things. And like the Shedeur Sanders rant, where he called it disgusting and clueless. It's not personal, man, that they didn't want to draft him. It's not disgusting. So it's just, I feel like he's lost some credibility over the years.
Yeah, I can't wait for Mel Kiper to come down on a Big 12 player on his draft stock, and then the Big 12 chimes in. Like, Mel Kiper drinks blood to stay alive. Like, okay. Thank you, Big 12. Nice job, admin. Coming up next on the show, Wednesdays, a little slow in the sports world, but not around here. We're going to inject some life into this midweek edition with my streaming corner. Chelsea Messenger, I'm Michael Jenkins. That is coming up next on the Daily Tip, and it is on the BetMGM Network. Make it legendary.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on a Wednesday. Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Hope you're having a great morning. Coming up, before you check out tonight's Game 3 of the ALCS, we'll give you something to stream. I feel so much better yesterday. Or I feel so much better today. Yesterday, oh my God, I was working on, I think everybody was working on about 2 or 3 hours sleep. Denton, how much sleep did you get after the Commanders game?
I was back in my bed at 1 a.m.
Oh, woof. I saw your TikTok, which is really good, on the Commanders, and then I saw the digital display behind you that said like 12.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, that poor guy, exhausted. So was I. And then went out, did the Commanders pod yesterday, came home, didn't sleep, stayed up, worked on this show, waited for Catherine to get home, and we were watching Body in the Basement or something. And I was just sitting there with my eyes like halfway closed. Woo! How many hours of sleep can you go on before you're like, all right, I'm done here. Like, I'm hitting the wall.
It depends on if you have a nap in your future. Because I do think that all things are possible if you can take a nap later in the day. Mm-hmm. Like, that can get me through it. But I'm not somebody who's fun to be around when I don't get sleep. Yeah. I think certain people can make it through the day on like 4 hours sleep, like continuously. Like my mom's one of those people that just like doesn't sleep. I am not one of those people. James, before I had this job, I think I slept like 12 to 13 hours
a
night.
Oh, yes.
It was glorious. I'm like a house cat.
Oh, I do that all the time. When the weekend hits, when I have time to sleep, because normally I get up at 4 a.m. every day, but which is what, 3 a.m. your time? Weekends, like, it's on. Like, around 1, I'm like, I guess I'll get going here. It's way late. But I'm like, I'll wake up when I feel like waking up. And usually it's way after 8 hours. So I'm with you. Whenever I have the time, I take advantage of it.
Do you believe in, like, the rollover effect where you're like, hey, I only got, like, 4 hours this night, so it means I need to get, like, extra hours the next night? Like, remember when phone plans used to do that, where there was, like, rollover minutes?
Yeah.
That's how I feel about my sleep.
Exactly. You had to be careful, too. You're like, I don't know. I don't get any rollover minutes this month. You know, and then sometimes you'd save them. You'd be like, I can talk for an extra hour. I really saved it back in March. Something crazy like that. Yes, this afternoon I'm definitely taking a nap. So I got enough to get up this morning, get going, but this afternoon, definitely nap time. Double D says no more than 5 or 6 hours a night for him. That sounds about right. That sounds like a father right there. Because I feel like once you get into kid mode, or a mother, you can relate to this. Once you have a child, I feel like immediately sleep becomes at a real premium.
I don't know, because kids sleep a lot too. Like, Blake does her best when she sleeps like at least 10 to 11 hours. Because, like, think about it. They're like growing and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it just depends. Obviously, if you have a newborn, things are different. You get sleep. It's just like in little sporadic moments. But I don't know. Blake takes after her mom. She likes to sleep too.
Good for her. Good for her. That's going to serve her well later on in life. Well, before you sleep tonight, let's find out what we've been streaming lately.
What are you watching?
We enter Jenks Streaming Corner, where Jenks and Chelsea tell you what should and should not be streaming here on the Daily Tip.
What are you watching?
I mentioned we were watching Body in the Basement last night. It's pretty good. It's all right. It's usually
casual.
It's casual. It's like 8 episodes. I don't even know what platform it's on. It's like, it's true crime. Let's watch it. It's quick. But I will say this last episode was really funny. It's clear the producers told the people being interviewed, when you say body, could you please say body in the basement? Because that's the name of the show. So it got egregious where we were making fun of it, where it was like, you know, we found the body in the basement. We had received a call that there might be a body in the basement, and that's how we knew to look for the body in the basement. We're like, God, okay, we get it. There's a body there. So that was fun. But that's not what I'm reviewing. If you want to watch that, fine. Knock yourself out. The Woman in Cabin 10 on Netflix, starring Keira Knightley. We watched that over the weekend. So she is a journalist invited on board a luxury yacht as part of a travel assignment, only to witness a murder that she is told never happened in the first place. You didn't see this. No, everything's fine here. So being a journalist, of course, she investigates. And it's only an hour and a half, so it's very taut. It's not amazing. You're not necessarily on the edge of your seat. But I think it's interesting enough where if you want a quick watch, she's really good at it. And, you know, it's lots of nice scenery. It's a luxury yacht, and there's all sorts of shots on the yacht and out in the Mediterranean. Or where are they headed? To maybe Finland, wherever they're going, and they're sailing the Atlantic. But lots of nice scenery. She's really good. It's nice and easy, quick watch. So, sure, I'll give it a thumbs up.
I do like Keira Knightley.
I do, too.
How many crime shows are just, hey, the basis is, like, murder, but it's in different locations. Yeah. Like, I feel like I see this all the time with, like, CSI, where it's like, CSI Miami, CSI New Orleans, CSI Columbus, Ohio. And you're like, wait, what? because it's like, how many ways can you, like, change a murder case? So, like, there's murder on a train. There's murder on a boat. There's murder at a national park. So I don't know if this is a theme because I don't watch true crime stuff, but is this basically the premise of a lot of shows is just murder at different places?
It is, but there's generally some sort of twist that makes it different. So if it's something like a half hour show, like a Forensic Files, which I know I always mention, then it's very formulaic, right? You know exactly what you're going to get. Here's what happened. Here's the location. And then here's how forensics helped solve the case. Here, there's definitely kind of a twist to sort of explain what happened at the end. And it's like, maybe. It's interesting. It's definitely not your run-of-the-mill crime movie or suspense movie, but it's good enough. I thought it was creative enough where I think there are some things where you have to sort of, you know, sort of push reality aside a touch, maybe. But I liked it. I like Keira Knightley, so it was good.
I feel like I've lowered my standards for, like, what I think good viewing is. Because there's, like, so much nonsense on Netflix and, like, all the streaming sources that I'm like, okay, if something's halfway decent and I didn't have to go to a movie theater, like, that gets a thumbs up from me. Okay. But, Jenks, it's October, and it feels like you like murder and crime. Murder. So it feels like there should be a parallel between you and horror movies. Do you find yourself watching Halloween movies?
Oh, God. I don't really like horror movies that much. I'm kind of a movie snob, I feel like, because I think it's because my time is so finite. And so if I watch something, like, this better be good. Like, I need this to be good. But then I understand the idea. Hey, I've been working a long time. I just want something campy and mindless and fun. Like, the lovely Catherine is like that. She loves horror movies. Like, I put her to bed early the other night. She's like, will you put on a horror movie? I was like, sure.
Put her to bed?
Well, we'd been... well, no, sorry. We had been out drinking, like, for most of the day. So it was like 9 o'clock, and she was like feeling like, she's like, I'm tired. I was like, you remember being bad? She's like, yeah. I was like, okay. So, and I stayed up like an hour after that, and then I went to bed. But I was up watching like the end of a baseball game, and she was tired. So I tucked her in, put on a horror movie, and she was out, which is a weird thing to fall asleep to, like a horror movie. But I was like, all right, that's what you want to see. But, you know, on the whole, every now and then, but campy isn't really my style. But some people love that kind of stuff.
I do like Halloween a lot, but I don't like scary movies. So I find myself trying to find the movies that give you the Halloween feeling without scaring you too much. Like, I like Scary Movie. I like Hocus Pocus. I just watched Hocus Pocus 2, which was actually pretty good. And I told you the other day that I watched Practical Magic. That's like about witches, but it's not like a Halloween movie per se. So like, I like the ones that like set the stage for Halloween and for fall without really scaring you. Like, I'm not trying to see The Conjuring.
Why not? Blake, get up. Guess what? Mommy's got cued. The Conjuring. Right. You're going to love it. And guess what? It's a double feature. Saw 2 is up next. She will not be sleeping 12
hours
any longer.
Somebody is watching these movies because they all have sequels. Who is watching Megan? And why are there so many sequels? And how did they get the funding for a Super Bowl commercial? Who's watching that?
Is anyone here watching Megan? Double D, you'd watch Megan. No? Anyone? All right. Mm. Yeah, I see. It's that creepy doll, right? With the doll eyes, and she looks kind of crazy. Yeah, she talks. Double D, get in. You watch Kathy Bates, you'll watch Megan.
I actually have never watched Megan, but my daughter, my 7-year-old daughter, loves Megan. She does the dance and everything. She's very creepy. Yeah, she'll even do the little head tilt that they do in the previews and just look at me, and I'm like, okay, you can stop now. Stop. Yeah, my daughter likes to be scared for some weird reason.
Blake's not even close to this. Like, Blake won't even watch normal Disney movies that have like scary parts in them. We tried to watch Twitches, which I don't know if you remember Tia and Tamara Mowry. Like, this was a Disney Channel movie, and the first is like a dark and stormy night. Blake's like, I can't watch. I'm like, all right, that was a failure of an experiment. So we are definitely not doing head tilts at our house.
I know exactly what you're talking about with the head tilt too, and I've never seen Megan. Also, who do you prefer, Tia or Tamara? Who's your favorite?
They're twins.
I know.
Like, I don't know. Even though I do know the answer to this question, if it was Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen. Like, remember when they were killing it? Like, I don't know if you were ever into that genre, because it would be a little weird if you're like, God, Passport to Paris? But I did like them a lot.
Oh, God. You know what? I'm going to save this talker. I'm not going to mention it. No, I was not into like, which one for me? No, that was not. But at one time they were red hot. Like movie wise, like oh my God, it was just like every single 6 months they had something else, which is why they're both, you know, they're both worth hundreds of millions and millions of dollars.
And they do nothing. I feel like you never hear about them. And they're just rich and like living in these huge like overcoats in New York City. Like that's all we see of them.
Yeah, isn't I don't even know what Mary-Kate does. Isn't it like an overcoat like at the Knicks game, and every now and then she'd be like, oh my God, there's Mary-Kate Olsen. Look at her. How is she 52
now? She
could
have been Megan.
She could have been. Size. She'd be a great Megan. Come on back to the fold. Lindsay Lohan did it. She's back. She looks great. Better than ever. Didn't she release Freaky Friday? Yeah.
Yes.
It's great.
I want to
bring back the Olsen twins. Sure. Okay. Coming up next year on the show, you don't have to be a bachelor or a bachelorette to get a first impression rose on this show. We're going to tell you which early NFL games are catching our eye. Hour 2 of the show is coming up next year on a Wednesday morning. Stay right there.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind.
behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.